News Talk WSB's Money Matters is on the air on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB, brought to you by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, and Sandy Springs. Money Matters is a live call-in talk show about money, investing, and how to grow and keep what you have. Your host is certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta Capital Investment Advisors, Wes Moss.
Is the American way.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters here on News Talk WSB. It is pouring rain outside, so I think you're probably tuning in because you want to know about the weather. Instead, we're going to be talking about here this morning those people that won the Powerball tickets. Florida residents, one of you is holding the winning ticket, $590.5 million jackpot. One of those tickets was sold at a Publix in Zephyr Hills, Florida. It has all six numbers, and that's the Florida Lottery announcing this Sunday, just this Sunday. So if you have the tickets, what a great day to be tuning in to Money Matters to figure out what to do with that $590 million. The lottery statistics are unbelievable. 90% of all lottery winners are broke within 5 years. 90% of lottery winners are broke within 5 years. Now, you're saying to yourself, listen, there is nobody that could blow $590 million in 5 years. Not even Brewster's Millions could do that. There's no way. Well, it doesn't matter how much you have, you can still blow it. I was watching HBO Real Sports last week. I had no idea that Mike Tyson had made $400 million. Now that poor guy is in debt to the IRS in the 7 to 8 figure range. So it can be done. It has been done. It will be done again. And hopefully these fortunate souls in Zephyr Hills, Florida, are not going to blow the $590 million. Now, they have the same problem that you have if you have $590,000 or $5.9 million or $59 million. You are stuck between a rock and a hard place as to where to put your money. So far this year, Dow Jones Industrial Average up 17%. S&P 500 up 17%. Dow floating at $15,354. Do you remember March of 2009 when the Dow was around 6,500? Today it's at 15,000. We are up nearly 10,000 points on the Dow. We are up, again, let me repeat that, nearly 10,000 points on the Dow. That is a number that if 4.5 years ago someone interviewing, if I had been doing an interview, let's say, on CNBC, and Joe Kernan said, Wes, how much is the Dow going to gain, let's say, 5 years from now, and I said 10,000 points, they would have laughed me off of the set. Yet here we stand, up 9, and I need to do the math on this, nearly 10,000 points, and just for the year, up 17%. And there are plenty of people out there that are sitting, and their money is still in cash. Their money is still sitting in bonds. Their money is still sitting in a stable value fund, while everyone else around them is getting rich. Present company in Zephyr Hills, Florida excluded. And you need to understand what you could possibly do right now about getting back into this market in a safe way so that you can still sleep well at night, because you're nervous that if you get into this market, you're getting in at the very, very top. And you just heard an Aftershock commercial that said the market's going to go down 90%. And you're still worried that the national debt, the top $16.5 trillion already, still today, is going to implode at one point. And Medicare and Social Security are going to go away because they're completely upside down instruments and they are unsustainable. And you are worried that 2007 and 2008 will come home to roost again just about the time when you're fully invested inside your 401k. And the question is, Wes, what the heck do we do right now? And that's what we'll talk about today. Good morning on Money Matters. By the way, Remember, stay tuned at 9:25, 9:26. We do ETF of the week. It's a time where we highlight a very low cost, highly diversified exchange traded fund that you could take a look at for your overall retirement portfolio. And we do that every Sunday morning at 10:26. At 10:26, we do something called Take a Look Around. That's where we highlight a company that you're already likely spending lots of money with. And it may be time for you to take a look at the parent company and see where all that money's going. Maybe it's a company or a stock that could make some sense to take a look at as well. But today, we are stuck between a rock and a hard place because we've gone through a decade of extremes, and we're at another extreme right now. And I want to talk about some ways to get through that. Well, let's go back and look at this last decade and see what we have gone through. Well, we have a technology bubble. Remember that? Since just the year 2000, it's 2013, so let's say 13 years. We had a tech bubble where stocks are down 80%, a housing bubble where stocks are down 35%, emerging market bubble where stocks in 07 to 08 lost 63%. We have a what many call a bond bubble. That hasn't happened yet. There hasn't been a bursting of that bubble. We had an oil bubble. Oil prices on West Texas, how we measure oil prices here, at least in the United States, West Texas crude oil bubble, $147 per barrel. And then that went all the way down to $38 a barrel. That was a 74% correction from 08 to 09. Well, we also had a gold bubble. Remember that? Back in September 2011, I said that there was a potential gold bubble. Gold was hitting about $1,800 an ounce. Since then, it's dropped about 30%, now down about 25% since April of 2017. I just mentioned the debt bubble. It's one bubble after another, and that's why it's so nerve-wracking to be invested in some sort of market. Your entire fortune tied up in something that is very difficult to control. Well, I did a talk this past week, and it's a talk that I do annually for our partners at CIA, where we bring in estate planning attorneys and insurance providers and all sorts of different kinds of attorneys, long-term care providers, other financial professionals, CPAs, and we bring them in for kind of an annual market update, a way to talk about what's happening in the economy, what's happening in the stock market, and to thank all of them for being a resource for our team. Remember, when someone comes to me with a problem, it might be a multifaceted problem well beyond just their investments. It might be I need to figure out what to do with long-term care insurance. Maybe it's my insurance planning. I have a term policy that's about to run out, and I still need insurance for another 5 or 10 years. I have a whole life policy I don't know what to do with. Hey, I need a new CPA. There are lots of other facets that go into your overall financial planning. It's not just, hey, how do I allocate my IRA into buckets? I can help you with that. I can help you with that very, very quickly and very easily. But what if there are 10 different things that you're worried about in your overall financial picture? I've got to bring in other experts that do all of these other facets of financial planning. So we bring these people in, we thank them, we play golf for the second half of the day after we talk about markets and the economy. And I went back and I looked at my talk from last year, and I typically start talks out with a what's scary now list. And it's usually very easy to come up with a dozen things. I call them here on Money Matters, the Dirty Dozen. Very easy to come up with things that are very scary. So let's go back a year, and here's what was on my list 1 year ago. Well, remember the coming fiscal cliff? That was very nerve-wracking. The 2012 fall election. We were worried about another double-dip recession. We were worried about U.S. debt being out of control. We were worried about the European debt crisis. We were still worried about oil prices in the Middle East. We were worried about inflation. We were worried about the high unemployment rate. We were still worried about the housing market. And we were still worried about the market actually continuing to go up. And was there a bubble forming in the stock market? Well, fast forward a year, I went back to the same list and I started crossing things off. Well, wait a minute, coming fiscal cliff. Well, we got through that and things are a heck of a lot better, even though we thought that could be a potential disaster. Disaster averted. Check. 2012 election, that's over. Oil prices mitigated completely. Well, we're trading around $93 a barrel for oil, so we can live with that. High unemployment rate. Well, that has come down again and again and again, and now we're down to 7.5%. Still a lot of wood to chop, a lot of improvement left to have happen, but that we've gotten through, that continues to get better. There is not a housing problem right now. In fact, the only malaise we're seeing in housing, this housing malaise I talked about a year ago, well, the housing malaise is over. The only malaise is that if you're trying to find a good property to buy, there's a malaise in supply of homes because the market has really corrected itself. The biggest worry on this, well, and let's go back to this, number three on the list is the U.S. destined for another recession. That's always going to stay on my What's Scary Now list because I just counted back to 1925. We've had 14 recessions. When those recessions last anywhere from 6 months to 2.5 years, we're always worried about a recession. We're either coming out of a recession or getting ready to go back into recession, and that's just the cyclicality of the U.S. economy. Well, U.S. debt's still out of control. We still could see a flare-up in the European debt crisis. We don't have to worry about inflation right now. We're worried about it in a year or two or three, but right now it's not a problem. So about half of my list has gotten crossed off, and that's a good thing. And that's, quite frankly, why the market is up 17% so far for this year. But the number one highlight on the list right now is still, is there a stock market bubble? So whether you just won the Powerball lottery or you're still wondering what to do with not $590 million, but $590,000, we're still running into a lot of these same issues. Where do I put it? So when we get back from break, we're going to talk about ETF of the week. We're going to talk about how the bucket approach is the most appropriate way to make sure that you don't try to time this market and shoot yourself in the foot. And we're going to talk about income investing, which is the pervasive theme of our show here, is the number one way that we try to advocate. It's our philosophy on how to try to enter in some predictability in a market that's otherwise very unpredictable. So good morning. Stay tuned and stay with us. You are listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Find me online at yourwealth.com. Here, a certified financial planner on Money Matters, News Talk, WSB.
Diversification will set you free. It's more money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss. This is Money Matters on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk, WSB.
ETF of the week. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. This week on the docket, Vanguard REIT Index ETF. Symbol VNQ. Victor Nancy and Queen. I don't know the alphanumeric military version of Q. I'll look that up. Yield on this, 3.15%. How much does it cost to hold this Vanguard ETF? It's basically free. It's 0.1%. 0.10% is the expense ratio inside this ETF. How big are these real estate investment trusts that are inside this ETF? Well, they average about $8.5 billion companies. So compared to 50 and $100 billion companies inside the S&P 500 or the Dow, these are relatively small, and that's the nature of most REITs. Well, what are the top 10 holdings? There's 121 of them inside of this ETF, and here are a couple of the big positions that make up the ETF. Number one, which is about 10% of VNQ, is Simon Property Group. You've probably heard of Simon, or you've seen their signs if you have ever shopped at Lenox Mall or Phipps. That's the owner of those properties. So think about the holding company, the real estate investment trust, that owns the mall property where J. Crew and the Sunglasses Hut and California Pizza Kitchen, they have to pay rent back, and then ultimately gets collected by Simon Property Group. And then Simon Property Group distributes that rent out to you in the form of that dividend yield. And if you look collectively, you look at companies like HCP, which owns healthcare properties, Public Storage, those are self-storage properties, Ventas, which are senior healthcare and housing properties. Think about all of those companies collecting rent, providing a dividend, and passing it through this Vanguard REIT. Well, find us online at yourwealth.com. That's yourwealth.com. And call me here in the studio this morning, 404-872-0750. You're listening to Money Matters here on News Talk WSB. Well, hey there. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on News Talk WSB. I am your host, Wes Moss here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11, to take your phone calls, your questions, your concerns about what's happening in this market. We've gone through my What's Scary Now list from last year, and we've crossed off about half the list. What's on the list new this year that wasn't really at the top of the list last year? Well, that's a stock market bubble. You're worried about the stock market being up 17% already for the year. The Dow 15,354 in the year that started out. Remember, it really started out at 2 o'clock in the morning on January 1st when Congress passed the fiscal cliff, some whatever you want to call that. I don't know if you really call that reform, but a new tax regime that we are under here in the United States. Once that got passed, and we knew that there was going to be new taxes, but we knew at least what they were going to be, and we knew who was going to be impacted, and we knew that there was going to be sequestration of $85 billion, and all of that has come to fruition, and we have lived to see another day. And despite all the fear about the fiscal cliff and how much that could have hurt our economy and how much sequestration could and still might dampen our economy, the stock market has powered right through that to the tune of 17% already on the Dow and the S&P. And then we find ourselves at a point of time when we want to know, should we time this market? Do we get in now? Should we be stepping out now? What if I've missed this? And it brings up the best and most important and most relevant chart, bar chart at least, in the history of investing over the last 20 years. And it's a chart that I have talked about, but not frequently enough. And I'm going to go over that in just a minute. So stay tuned, stay with me. But first, I wanted to bring up, remember, I'm going to start taking phone calls this segment. And I want to jog your memory a little bit about the things that you're worried about. You're worried about this very thing we're talking about. And you're thinking, hey, should I reallocate where I stand right now, all this cash that's piling up and doing nothing? And I know this for a fact because it's been one of the number one meetings I've had lately, or people that are now wanting to reallocate because they've been overly conservative in the last couple of years. They haven't had a balance, and they've been all to the safe side of the equation and all in safe haven assets, and now they're just getting frustrated, and they're saying, gosh, maybe I should have something in dividend-paying stocks. Maybe I should have something in an income-oriented approach. And then you're wondering, what do I do? Do I go buy an annuity? Do I go do I go change the mutual funds inside of my IRA or 401k? Do I change my Roth IRA? Do I buy a handful of dividend-paying stocks? Do I buy floating rate bonds right now? So these are all the items and the worries that are percolating right now for investors. So that's why I'm here and here every Sunday morning to take your calls and your questions live, to talk that through and give you my objective second opinion on what might work for you and your family as you're approaching retirement, or maybe you're just early on and you're just getting started as an investor. We'll talk about that as well. Or what if you're faced with a decision like so many early pre-retirees, young baby boomers, where their companies are knocking on their door and they're saying, hey, you're not quite at retirement age yet, but we'd love it if you would take this lump sum of money instead of the pension that we maybe promised you. And we'd like you to retire early. We want you to out the door, and we don't want to pay you for the rest of your life, because God forbid you could live another 40 years, because life expectancy is so good right now in the United States. We don't want to be on the hook for that. So let me pay you off. Let me give you a little bit of money in a lump sum and see if it's worth taking that. So are you deciding between a lump sum payout or some sort of monthly pension for the rest of your life? And how that relates back to you and your retirement planning. Well, we can go over that as well here. So I'm live here this kind of a rainy Sunday morning here in the latter part of May. And we're at 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Ryan Ely is standing by to take a phone call and patch that through. And we'll do that in just a moment. Now, let's go back to my favorite chart in the universe. And that at least is a chart that's the most helpful for investors. And that's a chart that's called Time In, Not Timing. And it's a chart done by BlackRock. I got this from J.P. Morgan, so that's my source. Who calculates the components of this chart? Well, it's a Dalbar, D-A-L-B-A-R. It's a Dalbar study that I've looked at for many, many years. And it's a 20-year annualized return by asset class. That just very simply means I'm going to take a look at what inflation's done over the last 20 years. I'm going to look at what properties have done for average home values, the international markets, what oil's done, gold's done. I'm going to look at what bonds have done versus stocks. So I've got all these different asset classes that I can compare how they've done on an average annualized basis over a 20-year period, which is going to include the go-go 90s, which were just straight up, and then the decade that started in the year 2000, which was the first time we saw a major bubble burst, and then we saw that happen two separate times during that same decade. So we've been through what I would consider one of the very best decades for stocks and one of the very worst decades for stocks. So you put those two together, that's a really representative 20 years for investments as a whole. And let's just go through what these asset classes have done. Well, if we start out with the S&P 500, we know that, well, let's not start there. Let's start with what have homes done over that period of time? The average annual home price per year climbed 3.25% per year on average. Now, that might not sound like a lot, because we at the latter part of the mid-2000s, let's say, 05 and 06, before the bubble really burst, we were climbing at 5, 6% a year. But on average, that 20-year period, homes went up in value by 3.25% on average. How about international stocks? Well, they averaged about 4.5% for the EAFE. That's Europe, Australia, and the Far East, the stocks in those regions of the world. How about gold? Well, gold averaged over that period of time a little over 5.25% during that same period of time. Again, this is average annual return, not cumulative. Oil, up about 6.75%. Well, bonds, great period of time for the safe and sleepiness of bonds, up 7% on average. I don't think we're going to see that again over the next 10 years. And then stocks, again, great 90s, terrible 2000s, still averaged over 8%, about 8.25% over that same period of time. Well, what are the average? This is something that can actually be measured, because we keep track of mutual fund data. We keep track of when money goes in mutual funds, when money comes out of mutual funds. And of course, every single mutual fund publishes data on their overall returns, and they publish it monthly. So this is something we can actually dive into and find out what average account returns have been over those period of times for investors. So we could actually go in and say, John and Mary Smith on average did this rate of return inside of their mutual fund. So we know what the average investor has actually experienced, their average annual return over the same period of time, when stocks averaged 8%, over 8%, bonds were 7%, oil was 6.75%, gold was over 5%, and the average individual investor only made 2.3% per year. That's it. 2.3%, where nearly all these other places you could have had your money were up significantly more than that. In fact, every single other place was up higher than that. And what's the only explanation for this? The only way you can give a logical explanation for this is that average investors are timing all of these different markets, whether they do it within mutual funds or ETFs, and they're timing it dead wrong. They're actually investing when markets are at a peak, and they're running away from markets when markets don't look favorable. And they're not doing it just in stocks, but they're doing it across the board. So the importance here is that no one can time this market perfectly, or not even well. So it's not about timing the market. It's about being in the market. It's about time actually spent in and being invested over the long term. So to me, this highlights the importance of being just persistent. No matter how bad things get, we have to stay persistent. But also, no matter how good things get, we have to stay persistent. And that persistence goes to dollar cost averaging. I'm going to continue to put money in my 401k, no matter what the market is doing, no matter how bad the market is doing, but also no matter how good the market is doing, because I'm going to be an investor here through both good cycles and bad cycles, because that is the nature of this market and will always be the nature of this market. And that's exactly what you as an investor have to do as well. So persistence, slow and steady wins this race, and also the persistence of being balanced. So I want you as an investor to absolutely maintain the balance of the buckets I like to talk about, so that, yes, I still want to hold some cash, but I also want to hold some percentage in the income bucket, which are made up of various types of bonds, and of course the growth bucket, which are made up of various types of stocks. In my opinion, there should be an emphasis on dividend paying stocks. You add all these areas up together, now all of a sudden we've got this nice steady balance that also pays you a nice steady income. That income is going to come from dividends, interest, and then distribution. So dividends from stocks, interest that comes from bonds, and then distributions that come from kind of a specialty bucket that'll hold pipeline companies, energy royalty trusts, real estate investment trusts, like we talked about with ETF of the week. Those three areas, those three buckets, they add up to a portfolio yield. A yield that comes from dividends, and a yield that comes from interest, and a yield that comes from distributions. It's really just a steady cash flow. And you put them all together, and you have a yield of 3.5% or 4% or 4.5%. And that's what is steady, and that's what will help you sleep well at night with a portfolio, no matter if the market's at 6,500 on the Dow or 15,000 on the Dow, because you still know you're going to get your cash flow. And when does that really start to work out? Well, around the time you need to retire, because now not only do you need to start using your money and using a distribution that comes from your money, well, you're not going to really be saving anymore. So you've got to make that money last. So this big controversy in financial planning of how much can I take, what's my withdrawal rate, is it 4%, is it 5%, is 4% now too much because the market hasn't really done well over the last 12 years, should it only be 3.5%? Well, I say that's a silly argument, because my thought here is that if you can generate 4%, which is a realistic number, by the way, in cash flow, then of course you can take 4%, because that means you're only eating what's in the refrigerator. If you're only spending your cash flow and you're only spending your dividends, interest, and distributions, then you've never got to thaw anything out from the freezer and get into your principal. So how are you going to run out of money? To me, that's a logical way to approach this. 404-872-0750 or 404-872-0750. Find me and the Money Matters team. Easy to do throughout the week. If you want to come find us, we're right up in Sandy Springs. If you want to just sit down or call us on the phone, the good old-fashioned website for that is yourwealth.com, yourwealth.com. As soon as we get back from break, lots of good calls and questions. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, Certified Financial Planner, here on Newstalk WSB.
Objective, unbiased investment advice. Call now at 404-872-0750 or toll free at 1-800-WSB-TALK. Wes Moss and Money Matters on 95.5 FM and AM 750. Newstalk WSB.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on Newstalk WSB. Right to the phones, 404-872-0750. Gary joins us from Douglasville. Hi, Gary. How can we help, my friend?
I've got a question on some stocks I have in my portfolio. This is separate from some investments I have with my financial advisor. I'm going to be retiring toward the end of the year, and I want to get the stocks into my portfolio to be able to pull annuity. Right now the stocks are sitting there. They're growing, but not going to be doing anything for me in my...
When you say annuity, you mean some sort of cash flow, right? Not buying an annuity.
No. I have some money with my financial advisor that is going to be able to allow me to draw money on a monthly kind of basis. I'm not sure what you call that.
Okay, some sort of just cash flow plan.
There you go.
And you've got a bunch of highly appreciated stocks, and you wonder what to do, and you're worried about the taxes if you were to sell.
Absolutely. Is there a way to get the taxes turned into the mutual fund portfolio that I have with my financial advisor, and at the same time as the transaction, pay all the taxes involved with that. So I will.
Well, how many different stocks do you have, and how much gain is there, Gary?
I have, let's see, probably about seven stocks, all food stocks, and in 2003, they were right up about under 100,000. 2010, there were about 160,000, and now they're about 280,000.
Hold that thought, Gary. I'm going to hold you over to the next segment here. We got to go to a break, news, weather, traffic, and then we'll talk and answer your question more about these highly appreciated stocks and your taxes. You're listening to Money Matters, PR News Talk, WSB.
And let the good time roll now. I'm talking about the good times.